and pork and ham. Oh, what a lucky wolf I am! And though he ate the pig quite fast, he carefully kept the tail till last.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
Robots Revolt and Rhymes, illustrations by Quentin Blake, read by Evelina and Madeline Kay.
Jack and the Beanstalk. Jack's mother said, "We're stony broke. Go out and find some wealthy bloke." Robot Carl just says she's sound and worth at least £100, but don't you dare to let him know that she's as old as Billy-O. Jack led the old brown cow away and came back later in the day and said, "Oh, Mumsy dear, guess what your clever little boy has got? I got, I really don't know how, a super trading for a cow." The mother said, "You little creep, I'll bet you sold her much too cheap." When Jack produced "When Lousy Bean," his startled mother, turning green, leaped high up in the air and cried, "I'm absolutely stupefied, you crazy boy. Do you really mean you sold our daisy for a bean?" She snatched the bean. She yelled, "You chump!" and flung it on the rubbish dump. Then, summoning up all her power, she beat the boy for half an hour, using, and nothing could be meaner, the handle of a vacuum cleaner. At 10 p.m. or thereabout, the little bean began to sprout. By morning it had grown so tall, you couldn't see the top at all. Young Jack cried, "Mom, I bet it now. It's better than a rotten cow." The mother said, "You lunatic. Where are the beans that I can pick? There's not one bean. It's bare as bare." "No, no," cried Jack. "You look up there. Look very high and you'll behold each single leaf is solid gold." By Godikins, the boy was right. Now glinting in the morning light, the mother actually perceives a mass of lovely golden leaves. She yells out loud, "My sainted souls, I'll sell a mini by rolls. Don't stand and gape, you little crot. Get up there quick and grab the lot." Jack was nimble, Jack was keen. He scrambled up the mighty bean. Up, up he went without a stop. But just as he was near the top, a ghastly, threatening fingered nut far above his head, he heard a big, deep voice, a rumbling thing that made the very heavens ring. He shouted loud, "Fee, fi, fo, fum, I smell the blood of an Englishman." Jack was frightened, Jack was quick, and down he climbed in half a tick. "Oh, Mum," he gasped, "believe you me, there's something nasty up our tree. I saw him, Mum. My gizzard froze. A giant with a clever nose. A clever nose." His mother hissed, "You must be going round the twist. He smelled me out. I swear it, Mum. He said he smelled an Englishman." The mother said, "And well he might. I've told you every single night to take a bath because you reek. But would you listen to me speak? You even make your mother shrink because of your unholy stink. Jack answered, well, if you're so clean, why don't you climb a crazy bean? The mother cried, by God, I will. There's life within the old dog still. She hitched her skirts above her knee and disappeared right up the tree. Now, would the giant smell his mum? Jack listened for the fee-fo-fum. He gazed aloft. He wondered when the dreadful words would come, and then, from somewhere high above the ground, there came a frightful crunching sound. He heard the giant mutter twice, by gosh, that tasted very nice. Although, and this in grumpy tones, I wish there weren't so many bones. By Christopher, Jack cried. By gum, the giant's eaten up my mum. He smelt her out in his belly. Jeez. I had a hunch that she was smelly. Jack stood there gazing longingly upon the huge and golden tree. He murmured softly, golly gosh, I guess I'll have to take a wash. If I'm going to climb this tree without the giant smelling me, in fact, a bath's my only hope. He rushed indoors and grabbed the soap. He scrubbed his body everywhere. He even washed and rinsed his hair. He did his teeth, he blew his nose, and went out smelling like a rose. Once more he climbed the mighty bean. A giant sat there, gross, obscene, muttering through his vicious teeth, while Jack sat tensely just beneath, muttering loud, fee, fi, fo, fum. Right now I can't smell anyone. Jack waited till the giant slept, then out along the boughs he crept and gathered so much gold, I swear he was an instant millionaire. A bath, he said, does seem to pay. I'm going to take one every day.
When little Snow White's mother died, the king, her father, up and cried, oh, what a nuisance, what a life. Now I must find another wife. It's not easy for a king to find himself that sort of thing. He wrote to every magazine and said, I'm looking for a queen. At least 10,000 girls replied and begged to be the royal bride. The king said with a shifty smile, I'd like to give each one a trial. However, in the end he chose a lady called Miss Macklehose, who brought along a curious toy that seemed to give her endless joy. This was a mirror framed in brass, a magic talking looking glass. Ask it something day or night, it always got the answer right. For instance, if you were to say, oh, mirror, what's for lunch today? The thing would answer in a trice, today it's scrambled eggs and rice. Now every day, week in, week out, the spoiled and stupid queen would shout, oh, mirror, mirror, on the wall, who is the fairest of them all? The mirror answered every time, oh, madam, you're the queen sublime. You are the only one to charm us. Queen, you are the cat's pajamas. For 10 whole years, the silly queen repeated this absurd routine. Then suddenly one awful day, she heard the magic mirror say, from now on, queen, you're number 2. Snow White is prettier than you. The queen went absolutely wild. She yelled, I'm going to scrag that child. I'll cook her flaming goose, I'll skin her, I'll have her rotten guts for dinner. She called the huntsman to her study. She shouted at him, listen, buddy, you drag that filthy child outside, and see, you take her for a ride. Thereafter, slit her ribs apart, and bring me back her bleeding heart. The huntsman dragged the lovely child deep, deep into the forest wild. Fearing the worst, poor Snow White spake. She cried out, please give me a break. The knife was poised, the arm was strong. She cried again, I've done no wrong. The huntsman's heart began to flutter. It melted like a pound of butter. He murmured, okay, beat it, kid. And you can bet your life she did. Later the huntsman made a stop within the local butcher's shop, and there he brought for safety's sake a bullock's heart and one nice steak. Oh, Majesty, oh, Queen, he cried, that rotten little girl has died. And just to prove I didn't cheat, I've brought along these bits of meat. The queen cried, Bravissimo! I trust you killed her nice and slow. And this is the disgusting part. The queen sat down and ate the heart. I only hope she cooked it well. Boiled heart can taste as tough as hell. While all of this was going on, where had Snow White gone? She'd found it easy, being pretty, to hitch a ride into the city. And there she'd got a job unpaid, as general cook and parlour maid, with 7 funny little men, each one not more than 3'10". Ex-horse race jockeys, all of them. These 7 dwarfs, though awfully nice, were guilty of one shocking vice. They squandered all of their resources at the racetrack, backing horses. When they hadn't backed a winner, none of them got any dinner. One evening, Snow White said, Look here, I think I've got a great idea. Just leave it all to me, okay? And no more gambling till I say. That very night, at eventide, young Snow White hitched another ride. And then, when it was very late, she slipped in through the palace gate. The king was in the counting house counting out the money. The queen was in the parlor eating bread and honey. The footman and the servant slept, so no one saw her as she crept on tiptoe through the mighty hall and grabbed the mirror off the wall. As soon as she had got it home, she told the senior dwarf or gnome to ask it what he wished to know. Go on, she shouted, have a go. He said, Oh, mirror, please don't joke. Each one of us is stony broke. Which horse will win tomorrow's race? The Ascot Gold Cup steeplechase. The mirror whispered sweet and low, The horse's name is Mistletoe. The dwarfs went absolutely daft. They kissed young Snow White fore and aft, then rushed away to raise some dough with which to back old Mistletoe. They pawned their watches, sold the car, they borrowed money near and far. For much of it they had to thank the manager of Barclays Bank. They went to Ascot, and of course, for once they backed the winning horse. Thereafter, every single day, the mirror made the bookies pay. Each dwarf and Snow White got their a share, and each was soon a millionaire. Well, it shows that gambling's not a sin, provided that you always win.
Listening to Radio Free School.
on C F M U.
Little Red Riding Hood and the Wolf. As soon as Wolf began to feel that he would like a decent meal, he went and knocked on Grandma's door. When Grandma opened it, she saw the sharp white teeth, the horrid grin, and Wolfie said, "May I come in?" Poor Grandmama was terrified. "He's going to eat me up!" she cried. And she was absolutely right. He ate her up in one big bite. But Grandmama was small and tough, and Wolfie wailed, "That's not enough! I haven't yet begun to feel that I have had a decent meal." He ran around the kitchen yelping, "I've got to have a second helping!" Then added with a frightful glare, "I'm therefore gonna wait right here till little Miss Red Riding Hood comes home from walking in the wood." He quickly put on Grandma's clothes. Of course, he hadn't eaten those. He dressed himself in coat and hat. He put on shoes, and after that, he even brushed and curled his hair. Then sat himself in Grandma's chair. In came the little girl in red. She stopped, she stared, and then she said, "What great big ears you have, Grandmama." "All the better to hear you with," the wolf replied. "What great big eyes you have, Grandmama," said Little Red Riding Hood. "All the better to see you with," the wolf replied. He sat there watching her and smiled. He thought, "I'm going to eat this child. Compared with her old Grandmama, she's going to taste like caviar." Then Little Red Riding Hood said, "But Grandmama, what a lovely great big furry coat you have on." "That's wrong," cried the wolf. "Have you forgot to tell me what big teeth I've got? Ah, well, no matter what you say, I'm going to eat you anywhere." The small girl smiles, one eyelid flickers. She whips a pistol from her knickers. She aims it at the creature's head, and bang, 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 she shoots him dead. A few weeks later, in the wood, I came across Miss Riding Hood. But what a change! No cloak of red, no silly hood upon her head. She said, "Hello, and please you note my lovely furry wolfskin coat."
"Why don't you take a picture? It'll last longer."
Three little pigs. The animal I really dig above all others is the pig. Pigs are noble, pigs are clever, pigs are courteous. However, now and then, to break this rule, one meets a pig who is a fool. What, for example, would you say if strolling through the woods one day, right there in front of you, you saw a pig who built his house of straw? The wolf who saw it licked his lips and said, "That pig has had his chips. Little pig, let me come in." "No, no, by the hairs of my chinny chin chin. Then I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house in." The little pig began to pray, but Wolfie blew his house away. He shouted, "Bacon, pork, and ham. Oh, what a lucky wolf I am!" And though he ate the pig quite fast, he carefully kept the tail till last. Wolf wandered on, a trifle bloated. Surprise, surprise, for soon he noted another little house for pigs, and this one had been built of twigs. "Little pig, let me come in. No, no, by the hairs of my chinny chin chin. Then I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house in." The wolf said, "Okay, here we go." He then began to blow and blow. The little pig began to squeal. He cried, "Oh, wolf, you've had one meal? Why can't we talk and make a deal?" The wolf replied, "Not on your Nelly." And soon the pig was in his belly. "Too jiggly little pig," Wolf cried, "but still I am not satisfied. I know full well my tummy's bulging, but oh, how I adore indulging." So creeping quietly as a mouse, the wolf approached another house. A house which also had inside a little piggy trying to hide. But this one, piggy number 3, was bright and brainy as could be. No straw for him, no twigs or sticks. This pig had built his house of bricks. "You'll not get me," Piggy cried. "I'll blow you down," the wolf replied. "Indeed," Pig said, "a lot of puff, and I don't think you've got enough." Wolf huffed and puffed and blew, the house stayed up as good as new. If I can't blow it down, Wolf said, I'll have to blow it up instead. I'll come back in the dead of night and blow it up with dynamite. Pig cried, you brute, I might have known. Then, picking up the telephone, he dialed as quickly as he could the number of Red Riding Hood. Hello, she said. Who's speaking? Who? Oh, hello, Piggy. How do you do? Pig cried, I need your help, Miss Hood. Oh, help me, please. Do you think you could? I'll try, of course, Miss Hood replied. What's on your mind? A wolf, Pig cried. I know you've dealt with wolves before, and now I've got one up my door. My darling Pig, she said, my sweet. That's something really up my street. I've just begun to wash my hair, but when it's dry, I'll be right there. A short while later, through the wood came striding brave Miss Riding Hood. The wolf stood there, eyes ablaze, and yellowish like mayonnaise. His teeth were sharp, his gums were raw, and spit was dropping from his jaw. Once more the maiden's eyelid flickered. She draws a pistol from her knickers. Once more she hits the vital spot and kills him with a single shot. Pig, peeping through the window, stood and yelled, Well done, Miss Riding Hood! Ah, Piglet, you must never trust young ladies from the upper crust. For now, Miss Riding Hood, one notes, not only has two wolfskin coats, but when she goes from place to place, she has a pigskin traveling case.
Goldilocks and the Three Bears. This famous wicked little tale should never have been put on sale. It is a mystery to me why loving parents cannot see that this is actually a book about a brazen little crook. Had I the chance, I wouldn't fail to clap young Goldilocks in jail. Now just imagine how you'd feel if you had cooked a lovely meal. Delicious porridge, steaming hot, fresh coffee in the coffee pot, with maybe toast and marmalade, the table beautifully laid. One place for you and one for Dad and another for your little lad. Then Dad cries, Golly gosh, gee whiz, oh Chris, how hot this porridge is. Let's take a walk along the street until it's cool enough to eat, he adds. An early morning stroll is good for people on the whole. It makes your appetite improve. It also helps your bowels to move. No proper wife would dare to question such a sensible suggestion. Above all, not at breakfast time when men are seldom in their prime. No sooner are you down the road than Goldilocks, that little toad, that noisy, thieving little louse, comes sneaking in your empty house. She looks around, she quickly notes three bowls brimful of porridged oats. And while still standing on her feet, she grabs a spoon and starts to eat. I say again, how would you feel if you had made this lovely meal and some delicate little tot broke in and gobbled up the lot. But wait, that's not the worst of it. Now comes the most distressing bit. You are, of course, a house-proud wife, and all your happy married life you have collected lovely things like gilded cherubs wearing wings and furniture by Chippendale bought at some famous auction sale. But your most special valued treasure, the piece that gives you endless pleasure, is one small children's dining chair, Elizabethan, very rare. It is in fact your joy and pride passed down to you on Grandma's side. But Goldilocks, like many freaks, does not appreciate antiques. She doesn't care, she doesn't mind, and now she plunks her fat behind upon this dainty, precious chair, and crunch, it busts beyond repair. A nice girl would at once exclaim, Oh dear, oh heavens, what a shame! Not Goldilocks. She begins to swear, she bellows, What a lousy chair! And uses one disgusting word, but luckily you've never heard. I dare not write it, even hint it. Nobody would ever print it. You'd think by now this little skunk would have the sense to do a bunk, but no, I very much regret. She hasn't nearly finished yet. If Sidon she would like a rest, she says, let's see which bed is best. Upstairs she goes and tries all three. Here comes the next catastrophe. Most educated people choose to rid themselves of socks and shoes before they clamber into bed, but Goldilocks didn't give a shred. Her filthy shoes were thick with grime, and mud and mush and slush and slime. We're still upon the heel of one with something that a dog had done. I say once more, what would you think if all this horrid dirt and stink
was smeared upon your eiderdown by this revolting little clown.
The famous story has no clues to Joe the girl removed her shoes. Oh, what a tale of crime on crime. Let's check it for a second time. Crime 1, the persecution's case. She breaks and enters someone's place. Crime 2, the persecutor notes she steals a bowl of porridge oat. Crime 3, she breaks a precious chair belonging to a baby bear. Crime 4, she smears each spotless sheet with filthy messes from her feet. A judge would say without a blink, 10 years hard labor in the clink. But in the book, as you will see, the little beast gets off scot-free. While tiny children near and far shout, goody good, hurrah, hurrah. Poor darling Goldilocks, they say. Thank goodness that she got away. Myself, I think I'd rather send young Goldilocks to a sticky end. Oh, Daddy, cried the baby bear. My porridge gone, it isn't fair. Then go upstairs, the big bear said. Your porridge is upon the bed. But as it's inside Mademoiselle, you'll have to eat her up as well.
Roll call! Come along now, you'll be late for parade. Rip, 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 cart.
You are listening to Radio Free School.
Discipline!
On CFMU.
Next one will be called, Little Stream. It's going to be called Little Stream.
Okay.
Myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1C. Oh.